Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on Sunday, April 17th, 2016. This is episode 1280. Enjoy! The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TechGuy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, smartphones, smart watches, digital photography. Yes, our photo guy, Chris Marquardt, will be here in a couple of hours. Let's see what else. GPS, virtual reality. I've got the Oculus Rift. We could talk about that. I'm very bullish on VR. You never know. You never know when something's going to be just a fad or the next big thing. It's hard to tell in technology. What do you think? 8888-ASK-LEO is my phone number if you want to ask a question or talk about VR. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can also reach us outside that area because we have lots of listeners on the Internet. Thank you to the Internet for that. You could use Skype to reach us. It's a toll-free number. Shouldn't cost you anything with Skype out. 8888-ASK-LEO. Website is techguylabs.com. Really, that's the only thing you have to remember. Everything's there. The address of the chat room, irc.twit.tv. I know I say that fast, but it's all on the website. The phone number, and of course, questions, answers, audio from each show, video from each show, techguylabs.com. Yeah, haven't had a much chance to play with the Oculus Rift because everybody else is playing with it. I always have to wait in line to play with the headset. I think it's a tough sell because you can't really tell what it's like till you put it on. I mean, that's for sure. Although, and I think we're going to see more of this, you're starting to see in stores Oculus demo stations, you know. And the HTC and Steam have teamed up to make another one called the Vive that might even be better. And then later this year, the Sony PlayStation 4 virtual reality. These are things, visors you wear on your head. You might have seen the Google's Cardboard, which actually came with the Sunday Times a couple of months ago. The idea of Cardboard is it's inexpensive. You know, it's literally made out of cardboard. And it's kind of like a ViewMaster. You have to hold it up. And it doesn't do anything unless you have an Android or iOS device that can run the Google Cardboard software. But if you can get a pretty good idea of what VR might be like, at least as a passive viewer. Because, you could just look. You can't interact. Then Samsung has that Gear VR, and they've been giving those away like crazy to people who buy the new Samsung Galaxy S7. So I think we're going to see a lot of that out there. But the experience, you have to try the experience of the better stuff. And it's, you know, it's hard. As I have mentioned before, I had to build a whole new computer just to do this. The requirements for the Oculus Rift are so high. I had to go out and spend some money, as many will. I think the estimate was only about 18% of all Windows computers in the world can run it. The rest will have to upgrade or buy new computers. So you can only watch somebody use it if you're lucky. Or maybe you can go to a store and try it. Although I think if you watch somebody use it and you see as soon as they put on this headset, and boy, let's face it, you look dorky. That's another strike against it. People don't like doing things that make them look dorky. Look at the Segway, right? It's a cool thing, but you look dorky riding one around, and then that kind of killed the market for it. So you look kind of dopey, but there is a look of glee that comes over people's faces when they put this thing on. I was playing what some are calling now the breakout hit of the Oculus Rift, a game that came with it for free that I mocked, to be honest. I thought this is not, you know, a game anybody's going to want to play. It was called Lucky's Tale, named after Palmer Luckey, who is the creator of the Oculus Rift. And the idea of Lucky's Tale was it's like you're a fox, okay? You're a fox, and you're running around in a wacky kind of cartoony 3D world. It's kid friendly. I mean, you have to jump on snails, otherwise they bite you, and you can whack them with your tail or jump on them. It's very Mario kind of. And I thought, oh, that's dopey. I don't even like those games. You know, I didn't like those games when I was young. Well, wasn't that young, because I'm pretty old and this is all pretty new. But you put on the visor and something happens, because first of all, it's the same game, but you're in the world. You're looking around over your shoulder, behind you, up and down, and wow, I'm here. You're in Lucky's world. And then when you're running, I mean, it's kind of real. Now, they don't have yet the hand doohickeys, the paddles, I'll call them. Those aren't going to be out for a while. But they do send a Xbox One controller, you know, one of those video game controllers with it. So you use that just as you would if you were, you know, watch it on TV to play. So you can play. You can run. You can jump. You can swipe your tail. But it's really cool. You can look over edges. And when you fall off a cliff, which you do, if you're like me and not very good at it, you really feel like, wow, it's kind of, oh, I fell off. Now, you're not first person. You're not looking at the world through Lucky's eyes. You're kind of over his shoulder. There are some games that you are the person. You are playing it. Those are a little bit queasy-making, I think. So I think for some people, I think this is probably the reason this one's like very popular, because they actually have to rate games in the store on their comfort level. So games that are less likely to make you queasy, they're comfortable. And I think this is a comfortable game. And then the game, maybe it's a medium game. And then there's games that are more likely to make you queasy. There's one where you're floating in space and you have to solve problems to get through the space. You're in zero gravity and queasy making, definitely queasy making, as it would be in the real world. They have some demos too, though, where there's one where you're on a top of a building and you're looking over the edge, and it makes you a little, wow, a little vertigo. So it's kind of cool to have that experience, I have to say. I feel bullish on this technology. Yes, it could be a fad. Could be like 3D in movies and TV. That really, I think that's, we can safely say now, that was a fad. Maybe it's more than that, though. This one, I think maybe it's more than that. And the thing I'm most excited about is something called augmented reality. It's very similar. You're still wearing a toaster on your forehead, a big visor, although it can be a little bit smaller, because it's more like sunglasses, because you can see through it. You can see your world. Now, that'll help in the queasy factor, for sure. You can, you know, it's like you're looking at the world. But superimposed on the world is stuff. So you can play a game. There's aliens in your living room, and you see your living room, and you see the aliens, and you can run around, and they can... Now, we're a ways off for this because, well, for one thing, you don't want to be tethered. You want to be able to walk around. You'd like to be able to drive, walk down the street, engage in real life. I mean, imagine you're driving and it's like a heads-up display. You get information about, you know, what's going on around you. Maybe you could see your rearview mirror. I mean, I guess you could do that anyway in real life. Maybe that's not such a benefit. Sometimes they talk about you look at people and you could see information about them pop up in a thought bubble. That's Joe. You used to work with him. He's got two kids. His wife is Nancy. He's kind of boring. Keep walking. That kind of stuff would be really useful for people like me who can't remember. Do I know you? I think augmented reality is going to be the new user interface to the world. I feel like that even more than virtual reality. Virtual reality, you don't see the world around you. You're in your own world. And that's another problem, is that you're kind of isolated. Even though you may be in a group of people, you can't see or hear them. You're in your own world. And that, I think our little monkey minds are going to feel like that makes us a little vulnerable. Like, should I really be sitting here with my friends and I can't see or hear or know what they're doing? You might want to lock the doors when you use VR. 8888 Ask Leo. I think our phones are down right now, but keep trying. If you can't get through, we'll do what we can to make them work. So I'll give you the number now, 888-827-5536. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. A little trouble with the phones right now, so I won't be able to take phone calls for a little bit. We'll see. We'll work on it. Somebody's working on it. You know what? You know what? Okay, a little behind the scenes here. So tomorrow, the big National Association of Broadcasters, or NAB show, takes place in Las Vegas. That's a big show for radio engineers. So everybody is on a plane to Las Vegas right now, including my studio engineer. I think Joe Talbot, the Telos guy who makes the hardware. They all left us in the lurch. We're just sitting here. You know, who needs this is now, by the way, this is why how you know you need engineers in the world. Yes. Wonderful, wonderful science fiction novel, Lucifer's Hammer, by a guy I'm proud to call a friend who is also listening to the show, Jerry Pournelle. Hi, Jerry. And one of the things, Jerry, who's a great science fiction writer, Lucifer's Hammer is a story of an asteroid hitting the Earth and devastating civilization. And one of the things he and his co-writer Larry Niven observe in the book is no one really knows how anything works, right? We live in such a high-tech world these days that if the engineers, the handful of people who understood how this stuff works, all, you know, were to disappear on a plane to Las Vegas, would you know how a TV works or a tablet or your laptop? Would you be able to fix even your telephone? I think many of us could perhaps fix a car, although increasingly, you know, I used to be able to, you know, do the timing belt and replace the spark plugs, change the oil. Can't do that anymore. You need a computer to plug in. In many cars, you don't even do that anymore. So as we get in a more technological society, we become more distanced from the technology we use, which means if something were to happen, the solution, by the way, in the book is they save the libraries so that future generations, first thing to do, of course, save the humans, you know, find ways to survive and then save the libraries. Now, I don't know, what is that today? See, books, even if we were to revert to a much more primitive state, you could still read a book. You wouldn't be able to access that hard drive or the floppy disk. Your digital technology is gone. So you really have to go back to, you know, the beginning and start with paper and ink and hope that everything is in there and you can figure it all out and start building it back up again. Is that fascinating, the idea that we live in a society that we probably couldn't recreate? So be nice. I'm saying be nice to your local sysadmin and engineer. Truth is, and no one engineer knows how everything works either, right? It's a group activity. I know how a few things work. I don't know if I would be able to even in my own studio, a studio I built and used to do all by myself, I don't know if I could get this working today. I don't know if I could get on over there and make that thing work. So we got the one guy who didn't get to go to Vegas. It's you, Kim, and me, and the one guy who didn't get to go to Vegas.
Going later.
I'm leaving later.
I'll be
Maybe I'll leave
with
now.
Broken equipment.
I could leave now. You know, it's such a habit. You want to give out the phone number, but I won't do that. I will talk a little bit about some of the things going on in technology until we get those phones working. We will. Great article in the Sunday Times today. I really enjoyed it. You can read it online. The Minecraft Generation. And, you know, this gives me hope along these lines, right? We need to get kids. We need to bring up kids who understand technology, who have an affinity for it, and who can rebuild these systems and continue to invent new systems, or we're just out of luck. Clive Thompson wrote this article, "How a clunky Swedish computer game, Minecraft, is teaching millions of children to master the digital world." Now, I would have poo-pooed this had you asked me this a few months ago. But I started playing Minecraft a few months ago. My son, I have a 13-year-old who wanted to have his own server. And so I thought, well, I'm the tech guy. I should be able to figure that out. I started with a Raspberry Pi, which by itself is very cool technology. It's a computer, a $35 computer. It doesn't come with a keyboard or mouse or a monitor. It doesn't even come with a case. You could put it in an Altoids tin or 3D print a case or buy one online. That's what I did. I bought a plastic case for it. It does have four USB ports, an Ethernet networking port, and an HDMI port. So you can plug in a standard keyboard and mouse on the USB ports, plug in a TV or a monitor on the HDMI port. It doesn't have its own memory. You'd use a little SD card, a little micro SD card. And the way you get it going is you load up on that SD card a thing they call NOOBS, N-O-O-B-S, which is the beginning point with when you boot it up. So you turn on, you plug this computer into a USB jack, and it turns on. And the screen comes alive with the rainbow colors. And then the operating system on this little SD card boots up. And it says, what do you want to do? What kind of operating system? What do you want to play with? The default is a form of Linux called Raspbian. For Raspberry, get it? Rasp. And the Ibian is from Debian, which is a Linux distribution. Linux is a free Unix-like operating system that they can distribute freely. But it's really powerful. So it starts up and it runs Linux. But one of the things that you can put on there, thank you Microsoft, is Minecraft. And better than that, you can put a version of a programming language called Python. It comes with it. And all of the interface software so that you can use the Python language to program Minecraft. So the article, there is a path. It's more than just starting the game and playing the game. If a child or an adult gets into it, the next step is you can give them a Raspberry Pi. Say, here, Sally, put this in your bedroom. Here's a monitor, keyboard, and mouse, leftover TV. Plug it in. Here's the manual. There's actually a great book, Learn How to Program in Minecraft by Craig Richardson. And just say, go to it. And I've mentioned this before. We actually interviewed Craig on one of our other shows. And I got a wonderful email from a parent who said he did exactly that with, I think, his 11 or 12-year-old girl. And she's now writing software. And because you can do things like build buildings in Minecraft or rainbows out of watermelons or whatever, she's got this great feedback loop. In the article, they talk about an 11-year-old in dark horn-rimmed glasses, Jordan, who is a devotee. And he is building things in Minecraft. And I think that this is Lego for the digital generation. It's really interesting. 8888 Ask Leo. We're going to keep working on those phones. We're going to see if we can get some calls going right after this. Stay tuned. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today brought to you by those good folks at ZipRecruiter. If you're hiring, or if you're the hiring manager of your company, I don't envy you. That can be a tough job. But I'm just going to make your day because I'm going to make that job a lot easier. Let me remind you, you have the most important job at your company because the person who hires is the person who shapes that company. Every employee changes the face of your company. And the smaller your company is, the more important it is that you hire somebody great. Of course, that means if it's a small company, you're spending time hiring at that one time when you know you're short-handed. ZipRecruiter is here to help. ZipRecruiter is the fastest way to hire the right person. See, let's say the right person. We know the right person's out there. They're out there. They're waiting for you. But where are they? Are they looking at job boards? Where ZipRecruiter posts to 100 plus job boards with one posting. They also put it on social media like Twitter and Facebook, Craigslist. So everybody everywhere is going to see that posting. They have 6 million of their own resumes because it's a great place to find a job, too. So they'll immediately start matching you. In fact, the applicants will start rolling in the first 24 hours. Now, when I say that, that sometimes gives people a little chill up their spine because they say, rolling in? Oh, I know. I don't want all those phone calls and emails. No, don't worry. They all go into the ZipRecruiter interface where it's very easy to screen out the ones you don't want, to rank the rest, and hire the right person fast. It is absolutely the best way to post a job. Post once, you'll watch your candidates roll in. You can hire the right person fast. No wonder 800,000 plus businesses use ZipRecruiter. Post to 100 job boards with one click of the mouse. Manage it. They even have HR and other stuff down to make it very easy for you to do the hiring you need to do. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/tech. I will even give you 4 days of ZipRecruiter free. Great way to start. ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. Waikiki Guru in our chat room says, I wish they had that when I was hiring. I know. ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. You'll love it. I think we have the phones working. Let's go right now to the 310 area code. That's all I know about you. Hi, what's your name?
Richard.
Hi, Richard. Welcome. What can I do for you?
Interesting morning for you, eh?
That's fine. You know, when you're the tech guy, tech breaks more often, right? Because you live on the bleeding edge.
And you have no one to call.
And who are you going to call, right?
What I wanted to ask you about is Periscope. I saw some woman on Periscope walking in the desert in Jordan.
Wild.
How was she connected?
Wild. Well, she had to obviously have some sort of internet connection. And
in the desert?
Well, I guess, okay, so there's two possibilities. One, it was pre-recorded and they're playing
it back. No, it wasn't. It was live. Yeah. I'm positive. But
Well, you would know because she would be talking to the chat, for instance. She'd say,
yes, indeed.
Okay. Right. And then the other is, this is an advantage that, a disadvantage that we have because we invented cell phones in the United States, is we have old infrastructure. And a lot, this is a, it's a weird effect in technology, but a lot of times the place where a technology started has the worst version of the technology. We arguably have the worst version of the internet in the United States, a worst version of cell technology, because we installed it first and there's a lot of legacy hardware. So in countries, perhaps Jordan's one of them, where they came late to cell phone technology, they embraced it in ways that we haven't. For instance, in many areas, there are no landlines. They just use cell phones. So there are, I would guess, I'm just guessing, but there must be a cell site in the desert. Now, remember, Jordan is pretty much a desert country, so she may be just, you know, a mile out of town.
She was in an area called Petra, to which I'm going.
Petra is beautiful. Now, I'm thinking because there's so much tourism in Petra,
yeah,
they probably do have cell there.
Ah, right.
Yeah, I'm thinking that. Oh, Petra. Are you going to Petra?
I'm going to Petra in mid-May.
Always wanted to go. Gorgeous. So these are beautiful. It's a stone city, right?
It's a stone city, and it had a history that's wonderful. And then I'm going down to a place called Wadi Rum, which is a big, beautiful desert area in the south.
Now I understand why you're asking this question, because you want to know what kind of connectivity you're going to have.
You've got it.
Yeah.
I was curious because she walked down the pathway toward the Petra main site, and I saw it all. And she kept saying, here we are here. And then she said, my battery's running out. I have to cut off.
Isn't that amazing that we can do that? This is a revolution that is about to explode. And it was Facebook this week put this kind of live streaming on Facebook with Android and iOS. And that means now, so Periscope's been around for a while.
Yes.
Meerkat as well as another solution. In fact, solutions like this, YouTube has a live streaming solution as well. All Samsung phones come with it. But having Facebook do it, there's something that makes it, that puts it on the map.
Right.
For instance, you know, are you on Facebook?
No, I'm not.
I picked the wrong guy to ask.
Right, sorry.
But a lot of travelers are.
Yeah.
You know, Rick Steves, who's a wonderful travel guru, I follow his stuff. He's on Facebook, and he will post videos all the time. And they're very personal. They're not like his PBS TV show. They're him just talking, and he's pointing his phone and saying, look, I'm here, and this is what they're doing, and we're having a meal. And I love it. There is something about it that's so authentic and genuine. I bet you your view of Petra, admittedly, it's not HD, and, you know, it's sideways video, and it's probably jiggly cam. But there's a certain immediacy to it that makes it very engaging, right?
Well, I'm going to try it. One other thing, by the way, I saw an article this morning on the fact that Dubai is going to install this Li-Fi on all their street lamps this
awesome.
Year.
Yeah, you know, believe it or not, New York City's doing something very similar. They're taking old phone booths, and they're putting a very high-speed internet into these old phone booths.
Is it Li-Fi or is it Wi-Fi?
It's Wi-Fi.
Well, this is Li-Fi I'm talking about.
What's Li-Fi?
Where you connect through a bulb to Wi-Fi.
Okay, it's still Wi-Fi. It's just a transmitter in a bulb. I get it.
So
that's like a That's a catchy name for putting a Wi-Fi transmitter in a bulb. But that's, you know what, that's good, because what you have is kind of an almost instantaneous setup, because there's power coming from the socket. You can replace your street lamps with these. Maybe we should do these everywhere. The only issue is, of course, you have to somehow provision it with internet. I would guess they're using what we call mesh networking, which is if one of the light bulbs has a fast connection, it can then share it to the other light bulbs, and they can share it to the next light bulb on and on and on and on and on.
I saw a demonstration by a Scottish professor named Haas, who showed how it could be done with a normal light bulb and a little gizmo he attached to his laptop. And he said the speed is incredible. It's exponentially faster than any Wi-Fi we're dealing with.
Oh, I see. All right. I'm sorry. Yes, you're right. This is, instead of using radio frequency, this is using light.
Yes.
I get it. So the bulb is, in effect, blinking faster than the eye can see, but and it's, by the way, in infrared or near ultraviolet. It's outside the visible spectrum. So it's kind of like fiber optic. You know, that's how fiber optic cable works.
Well, this should be something special. If it really can be commercialized and it works as well as this professor was showing it, and I guess Dubai thinks it is, because apparently they're installing the system on all of their street lamps.
Very interesting. Yeah, well, we'll have to find out. Are you going to Dubai as well?
No, I'm going to make one risk.
Good. Stick with Jordan. I think you'll love Jordan. Yeah.
I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, have a wonderful trip.
I'm going to test my phone there. I'm going to see if she was. The only thing I have thought of, and I don't know much about technology, is that maybe she had a sat phone. Is that possible?
She could have. Yeah, she could have. That's another possibility. I would warn you about using data roaming. You'll get a huge bill when you come back. So my suggestion, if you go there, the cheapest thing to do would be buy a local Jordanian SIM chip and put it in your phone. The next best thing would be to buy international minutes from your carrier. That can be very expensive.
Right. Yeah, I've heard you talk about that, and I don't want to run up a bill that's triple.
Who's your carrier?
Well, right now it's T-Mobile, but
You're in luck. T-Mobile has free international data. Now, what you'll find is it's 2G. It's very slow, not fast enough to Periscope.
Sure.
However, what they'll do is they text you. I know, because this happened to me when I was in Europe last year. They text you frequently saying, hey, if you want to get a little faster, you can buy a packet of data. It's not hugely expensive, and it's a day or two at a time, so you can try it out. Actually, you buy a few hundred megabytes. So, if you're on T-Mobile, I think you'll be good. Check first. It's not every country, but if it's available and if T-Mobile supports Jordan, you've already got free internet.
Well, I'm going to find out.
Oh, that's awesome. Hey, somehow send me an email or do you have a Twitter handle?
Yes. Let's see. What do I have? Interneter.
Interneter. Two T's in Interneter?
Two T's, yes.
INT, three T's, really, right? So, good. So we'll all follow Interneter, because that's how you know if somebody's Periscoping. Periscope's a Twitter product.
Yeah. I will upload something some way.
Very nice. Yeah, let us know.
Back in the middle of May, and I'll do what I can with any pictures I've taken.
Well, and this is one of the advantages of the Facebook thing. I know you're not a Facebooker, but you do it live on Facebook. It's immediately in the stream, so people can watch you live. But then it's preserved on Facebook, and people could go back and see it. So there's a real this is powerful. This is a revolution. And it goes hand in hand with having internet everywhere.
Oh, yes. It's happening. I mean, there's a very small shoe shop near my house. They are connected to the internet. It's hard to escape.
It's everywhere. Yeah. Which is good.
Yeah.
I'm all for it.
Complaining.
We're in a wired world. You know, there are privacy concerns, and I understand people have those. But, boy, the benefits of being able to watch a woman live at Petra talk about the monuments, say I'm here, I think in many ways pays for the privacy issues that come up as well.
Unfortunately, she was walking. She wasn't on a camel, so the picture was
good. Yeah, camels do not have a smooth gait, Mike.
No, that's not the way to do it. Anyway, I'm glad I could get through to you.
Hey, I'm so glad we could talk. And I'm going to talk about Li-Fi when we come back, because that's a very interesting. I was confusing. There are companies selling light bulbs in America that will add internet access, but that's just Wi-Fi and a light bulb. This is actually quite interesting. We'll talk about it when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yay, the phones are working and call screening is working and everybody's happy.
Nathan, you can take your finger off the button. The nuclear button.
Wow. Way to wake you up.
better than
you know,
coffee.
I probably could talk for 3 hours. But I'd prefer not to. It's much more fun to have a conversation than a monologue, right? I'm not here to do monologuing. I mean, I could. God knows. I have the skill set. Yeah, I have the skill set. So let's talk about Li-Fi. It uses light from light-emitting diodes as a medium to deliver networked mobile high-speed communication like Wi-Fi, but it's visible. So unlike Wi-Fi, it has to be line of sight. Visible light communications works by switching to the current to the LEDs on and off at a very high rate. Too quickly to be noticed by the human eye, although Li-Fi LEDs would have to be kept on to transmit data in the daytime, obviously, they can be dimmed to below human visibility while still emitting enough light to carry data. The light waves cannot penetrate walls. This is, by the way, Wikipedia, but it's clearly written by the Li-Fi Association because this is like an ad. Because they're saying, well, that makes it more secure from hacking. direct line of sight is not necessary for Li-Fi to transmit a signal because of reflections. They have to be pretty good reflections. Works well in electromagnetically sensitive areas like aircraft cabins, hospitals, and nuclear power plants because there's no EMF. It is on the electromagnetic spectrum, but it's at the visible light range, which is not a problem. Researchers have reached data rates of over 10 gigabits. Wow. It's demonstrated at the Mobile World Congress in 2014. You know, Harold Haas is the one who invented it at the University of Edinburgh. Very cool. I've heard, you know, we've seen many of these ideas. WiMAX, everybody, I remember very much, we were all excited about WiMAX, and that turned out to be an unworkable flop. So, you know, it's one thing to demonstrate something in a lab, another thing to demonstrate it in a real world. But I think I'm glad Dubai is going to do it, and we will find out. And, of course, the theoretical speed is not probably reasonable. For one thing, you know, if many people are using it. You know, wait a minute, though. It's got to be one way. How does that work? You don't have a Li-Fi transmitter in your phone. You don't even have a Li-Fi receiver in your phone. Wait a minute. Hold on there. Hold on there. You see? So you'd have to get a new smartphone. A clear, thin layer of crystal glass can be added to small screens like watches and smartphones that make them solar-powered. No. Yeah, Philips has developed this. But wait a minute. You can download an app on your phone and it'll work? What? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So very interesting technology, this Li-Fi. At first I thought it was something that you're seeing people do now in the United States, a Wi-Fi transmitter inside a light bulb. No. This is something very different. Invented it by Professor Haas at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland. Now, I have to say, I am always skeptical about especially when these new technologies come along with incredible claims. Haas says he's demonstrated 10 gigabits per second transmission rates. That's incredibly fast. But, you know, we've heard these kinds of things before, and sometimes they don't pan out, sometimes they do. So we've got to sort through it. Let me explain a few things, though. The idea of Li-Fi is makes sense. You have a specially constructed LED light. Can be used as a street light. It can be a regular light, but it also blinks very, very rapidly and transmits data that way. But remember that this is, first of all, a one-way street unless you have a special transmitter. So you can't... Now, they claim you can just use it on your smartphone with a special app. I guess the smartphone does have, you know, some capability of measuring light, because that's how they dim in bright light. Maybe it's conceivably possible that the smartphone could sense the flickering light, turns it into data, and then transmit back. How? With its infrared? Not all smartphones have infrared. Most of the Li-Fi installations I'm looking at here involve a separate hard piece of hardware that is the amplifier and receiver and transmitter, because it has to transmit back or it's not two-way internet. The one-way internet is not very useful. In fact, if you think about it, it's billboards. It's advertising, because you can't ask for a website. You can't send an email. You can't do anything. You can only receive content. That's a billboard. So I'm not sure what they're planning in Dubai. I'll have to read up on that. It's clever technology, and it's not so far-fetched, because after all, that's how fiber optics work. If you use a fiber optic cable, it's just glass that transmits light. And on one end, there's a light emitter. On the other end, a light receiver. Actually, on both ends, there's both, so you can send and receive. And it does it by blinking very rapidly. So this is an intriguing idea, but you know, my guess is you'd need some specialized hardware to do send and receive. It's particularly interesting, they say, in areas where you can't have or you don't want to have radio frequency emissions, like an airplane cabin or a hospital. So this would be appropriate for certain places. Remember, it's light, so it can't go around corners. It can't go through walls. However, they say there is some reflectivity capability, so it can bounce off of walls, so you might be able to continue to get a signal. You remember, somebody reminds me, I think Mike B in the chat room, Timex used to make a watch. The Data Link had one of these. It was an interesting idea. The watch could had some memory, could save things like calendar appointments and phone numbers. And the way you would program it, you would run the Data Link software on your computer and it would flicker your screen really fast. You'd have to hold the watch, which had a special light receiver on it, and hold the watch up to the computer monitor, and it would flicker the screen and the watch would be programmed. It took a while. You'd have to hold it there for like 30 seconds. It was kind of dopey. Couldn't transmit much data. But worst of all, as soon as people stopped using CRT monitors and started using LCDs, it stopped working. So bye-bye, Data Link. If it's like that, okay. I'm not going to get too excited about it. We shall see. Not a bad idea. You can't go wrong by being skeptical about technology, because most of the time it isn't good. But every once in a while, there's a jewel in there. And Li-Fi might be one of them. We'll certainly keep an eye on it. Grand Rapids, Michigan. Noah's next. Hi, Noah.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. So my phone, I have a micro SD card in it, because I only have 16 gigs of storage. And it just, whenever I try and copy over any media or apps, I'll get errors, and then my phone will crash, and it'll say there's not enough room, but there's more than 25 gigabytes available, and it's just...
What kind? It's an Android phone, obviously.
Yeah.
What kind of phone?
Galaxy S4.
Oh, nice. So, first thing, when you first put in that micro SD card, did you format it with the Galaxy software, with the Android software? Okay, so that's important, because it could be a format that's hard for the phone to read, but it also refreshes the media. And you've been using it for some time without a problem?
Well, I mean, I've always had problems.
You've always had problems.
It's never been anything like this bad.
Could be a bad card. You might take it out and use a reader to look at it on your computer and make sure that you can read to write to it on your computer. Remember that Android has some limitations about what you can put on there. It sounds like you're doing the right thing. Your camera, for instance, you can change the settings that when you take a picture, it goes to the card.
Yeah, I have that turned on.
Yeah, sometimes cameras will say, oh, we can only do that if you use burst mode, we're going to have to save it internally because it's not fast enough to save it to the card. But you should be, it should, so does your camera work saving it to the card pretty reliably?
Yeah, I've never had a problem with that.
Okay, so good. That's a good sign. And what you want to do is move music over there?
Like in the settings, when you go to the application manager, you can move apps to the SD.
Ah, okay. That's what I was thinking about. All right. Apps are another story entirely. Android's never satisfactorily supported this. In theory, most apps can be moved to SD, but one of the things, if they're on the SD card, they can't be. There is no widgets allowed. So if you have any widgets on your desktop, on your phone, they'll disappear when you move the app. There may also be issues with that app. Actually, what happened is Google, shortly thereafter, because you have you probably have on there, is it Lollipop?
Yep.
Shortly thereafter, after that phone came out, Google stopped doing SD cards. None of the Google phones support SD cards, the Nexus phones, because of these issues of reliability. Then they added a feature called adopted storage, where the SD card is magically merged into the total storage. I don't know if they're using Chroot or something, but they're somehow magically making it look like it's part of the internal storage. And that works better. But, of course, your phone and your operating system are old enough, they're not supporting adopted storage yet.
Is there a way that I can, do adopted storage, if I root my phone?
Yes.
Have these problems?
Yeah, you'd have to move it to the latest version of CyanogenMod or something equivalent with Marshmallow. And then you could, Marshmallow Android 6 is the adopted storage version.
Okay.
Some phones like the Galaxy S7 and the LG G5, they've decided not to use it. So there may be issues with adopted storage. I know the new HTC 10 does use it. So I'm not sure. This whole thing is hard to do. When the Windows Phone first came out, they supported SD cards, but they never worked. It's hard to do for some reason. I'm not sure why. Apple, as you know, has never offered SD cards. Could just be you have a flaky SD card. The good news is a 64-gig card is about $15. So you might try just getting a new card. That may be the solution. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yes, I know, Mike B, but I wouldn't do it if I were you. You'd be very sorry. Actually, I really want to get an H10. I think Jason Howell ordered one. I was so disappointed with the last few HTC phones, and I don't know if I want to take the chance or not.
Yeah, those microSDs are really cheap now.
They're so cheap. All flash is cheap. I know. That's amazing. It's amazing.
I put all my music onto my...
Right. Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have 128 gigs in here. But, I didn't get to finish, but my recommendation really is just stick with putting media on it. It's best not to put apps on it unless you have to. Yeah, but I don't recommend it. No, I don't recommend it. I could do that here, but I'm keeping just... But you know what? It's great. I have all the audiobooks. I have, many hours of music on here. I probably have 30 gigs of music on here, so it's nice. And this is good for, on the flight today, I'll have plenty of music. Let me see if I look on here, if it tells me how much... No, we're just broadcasting from there. We're going to do some shows. We're going to do Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday from there. I'm coming back Monday night, but I'm going to do Triangulation and iOS Today from there. Yeah, this doesn't say how many songs I have on here. But I have a lot. I have a lot of songs. A lot of songs on here.
Do you also have Apple Music?
No, I don't use Apple Music. I have Google. I have Google, Spotify, and this is Amazon. But you can't stream. I don't want to stream on a plane. I guess I could stream because I could buy their stuff. But I like to have my own music. I think it's, why stream if you don't have to? So maybe Google will tell me how many songs I have. I just got Black Sabbath's. They were giving away Black Sabbath's second album, I think. It was good. All right, downloaded only. Music library.
Do you like the Android better than iPhone?
Oh, yeah, much better.
When iPhone 6 came out,
I switched to iPhone 6S Plus and used it for a while, but it's so antiquated. Frankly, Apple has not kept it up. No, it really is. Apple has not kept it up. Simple things like you can only have one. First of all, the interface is terrible. It's just icons, right? And you can only have one icon on the desktop. So what I do with Android is I'll have, you know, my Facebook on the front, but I also have it stored in a social media folder so I can, you know, makes it easier to find. You can have aliases. You can't do that on an Apple. You can't do widgets on an iPhone. So, I have a big widget that tells me the time and date and the weather. This is Kronos, which I really recommend. So, this you can't do that on an iPhone. I can go on and on and on. Third-party keyboard support's terrible. I wish it were better because that was one thing that did make me move to the iPhone 6S because I was able to finally use third-party keyboards, but Apple turns them off, you know, anytime you can enter a password, and that's really where I need a good keyboard, so it's kind of dopey. One of the things I really like about Android is, Apple, for security reasons, only lets, you know, information, for instance, the NFC chip, the only thing on an iPhone that has access to the NFC chip is Android Pay or Apple Pay. So you can't use the NFC chip for any other purpose, but you can on Android. So you can tap it to NFC things. There's all sorts of things. You can do it for Bluetooth pairing. There's all sorts of things you can do. Apple won't let you do. It could do. It's got the hardware to do. It just won't let you do. You can use any text messaging program you want. So I don't have to use Apple's messages or Android's Google's messages. I'm using Facebook Messenger as my SMS app. So I also get Facebook messages as well as text messages in here. But I could use something more secure like Signal as my SMS app if I wanted. I can go on and on. I mean, it's just Chronus. Kronos.
Ah, weather icons.
Yeah. So it's a very flexible it's very flexible. You can design your own. I use Kronos Flex. They have a variety of different widgets. But I use Kronos Flex, and then you can set it to how you want it, clock and alarm, weather, extensions, news feed, calendar events, general appearance. So on my home screen, which is nice, I have time, date, battery, weather, and then my calendar is here too. So all of that in a quick glance. That's a good question.
Then there's weather and clock widget.
I'll tell you which one to get. Oh, you're looking at the widgets.
Well, whichever one you're looking
at. Have you downloaded it already?
No.
Okay. So let me see which one I have.
I've been looking for a good weather app on my old iPhone.
I would say the home and lock widget probably. Let me look. Yeah, the home and lock widget.
Okay.
That's the one I have installed. Very good. And then here's another thing. With Apple, you can only use Springboard, their launcher, but I'm using Nova Launcher, which is a much better launcher than Samsung's TouchWiz, but I don't have to use TouchWiz. And so, for instance, I have multiple docs. I can slide my dock over, and I have, like, here's my financial applications. Here's all my contacts, so I can quickly text or phone somebody.
Are you still using LastPass? I am.
Yeah, still using LastPass. I haven't abandoned LastPass yet. Keep waiting. I know. I'm tempted. I know. I tried 1Password for a while. I like it. I'm tempted to use... The reason I like 1Password over LastPass is that you store your password locker yourself. You don't have to upload it to them. And that's the one weak link on LastPass is they have your password vault. It's encrypted and well-protected, but they have it. So, it'd be better not to have... But it'd be better to figure out a way to do it where no one has your password vault. 1Password does it that way. Yeah, it's hard to find the... On new screensavers yesterday, I said, oh, they haven't added it to Android, but they do have live streaming on Android. Let me go back to Facebook. So what you do is you share. It's not immediately obvious because the icons here are photo, location, group, and widget. But if you tap add photos and more, then you get down here at the bottom, go live. So now you can go live. But it's just they've kind of hidden it on Android for some reason. I'm not sure. So, yeah, that's available. I'm really intrigued by the HTC 10. The thing I love about... First of all, this is just a beautiful phone, even with a case. But without the case, it's even more beautiful. But you have to have a case because it cracks easily. But even... Whoops. No, I don't know who I'm hanging. Oh, I'm calling me. Stop calling me. Even even with the case, it's got this beautiful curve. I just really feel like it's a beautiful phone. The camera is superb. It's very snappy, although the HTC 10 is essentially the same, except it's an LCD, not a OLED screen. I love Samsung's OLED screens. I just love Samsung's OLED screens. So, I don't know. It's a challenge. I probably have to order it. This is the phone I've stayed with for a long time. 6P is excellent, but I like this a little bit marginally better. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and smartphones and smartwatches, digital photography, travel, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, virtual reality toasters, 888-827-5536 if you want to talk. I'm here. I'll listen. I'll answer questions. Hear your thoughts, your concerns, your suggestions. 8888 Ask Leo. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, coming up in half an hour. Looking forward to hear from him. Let's move on to the next caller, and that's Joey in Ontario, Canada. Hi, Joey.
Hello. How are you? I'm a big fan.
Oh, thank you.
For years.
Thank you.
I actually watched you when you were live with Leo Laporte.
Wow. I used to be Leo Laporte. Many people don't know that. Now I'm the tech guy.
Yeah. I used to wake up an hour early for school to watch you.
wow. Thank you. I am very honored. Thank you so much.
No problem. No, I would love to.
Anything that can get a teenager up an hour earlier, that's amazing.
6 a.m.
Wow. Wow.
Or 3 a.m. your time. But yeah. So my question is with Carbonite. Because I try to use all your sponsors.
Thank you. That helps support the show. It helps. It is. That's the way the show works. So thank you.
But for some reason, I have a 2012 MacBook Air.
Yep.
Running El Capitan.
Yep.
And for some reason, I had to do a reset on my MacBook Air probably almost a year ago now. And ever since when I went to reinstall Carbonite, it won't reinstall.
What does it say?
It'll go through the process, and it'll say, I'm downloading, and I'm downloading the registration files and activation files and all this stuff. But then it just says, can't reach the Carbonite server.
Huh. Yeah, I use it on El Capitan. It works fine for me. So it's not El Capitan, the version of OS X. No. Can't reach the server is interesting. Tell me about your internet situation. Is it Wi-Fi?
I have 6 megabyte up. And I think like half a meg down.
Yeah, no, it's not the speed. It's just it says I can't talk to it. How about a firewall? Have you turned on a firewall? You might look at your Macintosh firewall and make sure that you haven't.
The firewall on Macintosh is off.
Okay.
The firewall.
By the way, you want to leave it on. You just want to. It could block it, so you want to make sure it's not blocking it. But you definitely want to turn it on. I don't know why Apple doesn't turn on that firewall by default, but that's a little tip for all Mac users. Turn it on.
The internet firewall's on though. Like my router's firewall's on.
Yeah. Good. That's probably enough. But remember, it's a laptop. You take it outside. If you're going to at home, it's not a problem. But if you're going to a coffee shop, it might be.
Yeah.
And by the way, there's another reason why you keep a firewall on in a local network. If somebody comes into your local network with a bug on their laptop, now you're using a Mac, so you're probably not vulnerable. But just as a matter of course, if they have a bug on their computer, some worms will go out and look around the local area network and infect any other computer on the local area network. So in general, you always want to keep a firewall running, even in your own internal network. But let's get back to this Carbonite. So that's one thing I would worry about. Have you called Carbonite, by the way? They have very good tech support.
No, I haven't called them yet. I wanted to call you first. Just to see what you were.
Yeah, I mean, the not being able to connect to the network tells me there's something blocking your access.
Well, I went on the router a little while ago and turned off the firewall to see if that was stopping it, and that had no effect.
Yeah. Let me see if Carbonite uses, what ports Carbonite uses. Yeah, it looks like it uses HTTP and SSL, so it shouldn't be blocked because those are the same ports that your web browser uses to talk to the internet. Is your DNS working properly? How do you do your DNS?
My DNS is working. I have no problems with like getting on any like websites or anything or any problems with that. Like that is working.
Well, I you could check the Carbonite website, you know, for support, and you could call them. Dr. Mom says try logging on to the Carbonite website directly. You can do the reinstall from there. That actually is how I always do it. So I wonder if you just copied the software from your old install. It might be time to uninstall whatever you're using. Go to carbonite.com and download it there. And that might be worth trying. And of course, we'll put a link in the show notes of the Carbonite support. Scooter X, our chat mod, just put that up. Personal Pro, Mac, Windows, difficulty installing, support note. Take a look at that. I'm sure there'll be a solution there. I use it on El Capitan all the time, and I like it on El Capitan. Pauline in Switzerland. Switzerland! Hey, Pauline! Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Pauline! I can hear the Alps in the background. Maybe if we yodel at her. I hear a bird. You hear a bird? That's a cuckoo bird. Pauline has wandered off from the phone. I'll put her on hold. I don't want to hear any personal conversations. So let me see if I can hold on. No, I've locked her now. Let's see. There we go. No. I really don't understand how this phone system works. One of these days, would you teach me, Kim? Because I have no idea. JC in Mississippi. Hi, JC.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. Welcome.
Thank you. I've got two quick questions for you.
Okay.
Number one is I am looking for a piece of software. Well, I guess it makes sense if you knew what I did. I am a systems admin.
All right.
For 35 plus companies.
Wow.
Okay.
You're a busy man.
Yeah. I own my own company that does sysadmin. What we are running into, though, is getting busier and busier and busier. We have the storage space for it, but we're trying to find a good imaging program that will take a full system state image of Windows, whether it's home, pro, server version, whatever.
I am flattered that you would be asking me. This is your business. You know, for years, of course, you probably used it. Everybody used Norton Ghost, right?
I tried Symantec Ghost, and the problem is
it's
the cost effectiveness is, well, and it's not cost effective. I have to pay to be legal and to be appropriate.
Right.
I have to pay for every single computer.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. I got one that's free. Yeah. How about that? Is free a good price?
That's even better. That's awesome.
We still call this ghosting, by the way, because of Norton Ghost. And the idea is to make a complete and full image. IT folks use it all the time, and I'm guessing this is one of the reasons you want this, JC, for installs. So you have 100 HP 702 computers. They're all identical. You take one, you make it just so. You build it out, got all the apps on it, the corporate stuff they want, the locks and, you know, all the settings. You use group policy editor to make sure it's safe. Then you use an imager to take what's on that hard drive, and now you can clone it. You can even clone it over a network. You just go boom, 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 boom down the line, and all of them are provisioned exactly the same. It's very handy. It's also handy if somebody screws their computer up, because you can just push a button.
That's actually more what we're using it for, Leo. Yeah. It's not for deployment as much as it is for, because I've got, like I said, 35 companies. Some of those companies only have two or three computers.
Right.
Some of those companies have 30 or 40 computers.
You don't have 100 of the same computer. You have a very heterogeneous environment, but you could make an image of every single computer in that environment. So if, you know, Joey comes in on Friday and installs CryptoLocker, you can restore Joey.
Exactly. And we take backups. We take daily backups automatically through VPN that backs up to our facility.
Good.
Okay. And that actually is triple redundant. So I have two other facilities.
I love you. I want you to work for us. Sounds like you know what you're doing. That's awesome. So here's what the chat room always tells me when I ask this question. And I resist it, but I think this is a solution. It's an open source product called CloneZilla. And here's why it's great. You're not doing it in Windows. You're going to make a CloneZilla disk. You can do it on a USB key. It actually runs Linux, so a stripped down version of Linux. and it makes the image. So you put in the USB key, and you make the image. And the beauty of that is it's fast to make it, fast to restore. You get every bit of it, and it's free. Clonezilla. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sorry to end so abruptly. We run out. We're at the clock, network clock. But I have not used this, but everybody in the chat room raves about this. It's a clonezilla.org.
Okay.
Now, of course, there's a Acronis True Image, which is what most IT departments use. That's a commercial program. You're going to have the same problem. The advantage of this is you're just going to make a Clonezilla, you know, drive. Probably on a USB key that you go in and you bring along. You're going to bring along a USB drive, or are you going to have a second drive?
My goal was to carry around a 4 terabyte external drive.
Perfect.
And then bring it back to the facility and actually put it into our backup system. And we're going to do that once a quarter. So once a quarter, we're going to take a full image and delete the old image. We're going to keep 3 versions once it's all done. We have half a petabyte, so we should be good.
You can do this over PXE if you have that capability, but it'll also boot off of a CD or a USB port or a hard drive. So you could make a Clonezilla, 4 terabyte Clonezilla hard drive. You just go in there, you plug it into the computer, you reboot the computer to the hard drive, you make the clone onto that drive, and you move on.
I should be able to move it like a folder into my backup system here.
Absolutely, it's just a standard file.
Okay. Sweet.
The advantage of doing it this way, I mean, you know, all these other imagers do it while Windows is running, and I think it really is an advantage to boot out of Windows and to do it from something that just is looking at the raw sectors and backing it up. That's how Ghost used to work, and so that's how this works. So don't be scared off by the fact that it's not running Windows. It supports every file system, NTFS, all, you know, HFS Plus on Macs. So it's very compatible. It's just that you have to run a minimal operating system to get this thing working.
It'll go all the way back to FAT?
Oh, absolutely. FAT 12.
I got 195 machine. Got the image.
FAT 12 it'll do, FAT 16, 32. It'll do anything. And, you know, that's not surprising because it doesn't care about the file system, right? It's just doing a sector copy.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Let me ask you another question real quick. I've got a I deploy Dell SonicWalls a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But my problem with the Dell SonicWall, it's not really a problem because I know you can turn it off. It's that you have the extra cost involved.
Right.
With the antivirus running at the network level. I prefer to have that running on the local machine.
Right.
Plus, with images, if something does happen, you know, we can
that's great.
Back up.
Boy, I wish you were working for me. You sound like you know what you're doing. That's awesome.
Is there an IPsec router out there for? And there's this kind of a twofold question. Number one, that I and the reason is for me to be able to log into them, and I want to use VNC Viewer because log me in is killing the machine.
Yep, yep, yep.
So I want to use VNC Viewer or Ultra VNC Viewer because then when it's not running, it's not really doing anything.
Yeah.
But I'm looking for something that I can deploy in the home, something that kind of makes sense to most consumers on a price level. And doesn't have that.
Something not Cisco, in other words, right?
Well, I mean, I don't really care about the brand name.
Yeah.
Just you know, I was trying to find one that was like Netgear. I love Netgear stuff for the home, but
right.
I couldn't find anything that was IPsec capable without having to add a bunch of other junk in there.
Yeah, that's a good. I don't know the answer to that question. That's a great question. Chat room's listening. They may have some solutions for you.
I'm logged in. I'm JC for MI5.
So, nice to see you, JC. That's great.
I'll be reading them.
Chat room, help him. He needs an IPsec compatible router. All right. Hey, good to talk to you. Thank you.
You too, Leo.
Take care, JC. Chris Marquardt, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I can hear you. You can hear me. All's right with the world. We'll talk to you in 10.
That's a very good sign.
Thanks. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, taking your calls, talking high tech. Got a question? Let me see if I have an answer for you. Let's go to Pauline. All right, you talked to Pauline?
She's back.
She's ready. Yes. Pauline, we heard your cuckoo in the background.
Really?
No. Well, there's a bird.
I had no idea.
Maybe it's just outside. Where in Switzerland are you?
In Bern.
How nice. Do you make your home there?
Yes.
You sound American, or else you just have a perfect accent.
I'm an American, yes.
Okay. But you've moved to Switzerland.
I'm a transplant, yes.
And do you love living there?
Yes.
Is Bern French or German?
It's German, very close to the French area, though. Okay. We're about 20 minutes by train from Romandie, where they speak French.
Sounds wonderful.
It's very nice.
Well, I'm so glad you listen. We love our international listeners. What can I do for you?
I have a question about Yahoo email. Speaking of backing up.
You're not alone. Holy cow.
Yeah. Huh?
What's the issue?
Well, because they're in the news lately.
Yeah. Yeah, they're about to be sold is what you're saying. Yes.
Right. And this has happened a few times in the past, but I've wondered, how can I back up my web email, my Yahoo email?
Oh, that's a great question. So first of all, it is very likely that I think Verizon will buy it. And the email is almost certainly part of why they would buy it. So you would be transitioned. One of the hints of that is that Verizon's already transitioning. They're going the other way. They're going to AOL because they own AOL as well. They're moving some of their Yahoo Mail clients already over to AOL. And that's one of the reasons we're getting a lot of questions about Yahoo Mail. So one of the things that happens when you use a Pop Mail client is you are backing it up. So if you launch, do you have paid Yahoo Mail or do you have the free Yahoo Mail?
I think I have the paid one.
Okay. So paid Yahoo Mail allows you to set up a POP client, like your mail client on your desktop. Are you using Windows or Mac?
Mac. That would be Mail app.
Yeah. So the Mail app can be set up to work with Yahoo as a POP, not an IMAP client.
Okay.
When you use it as a POP client, it downloads the mail, physically downloads it to the hard drive. Now you have a copy on your hard drive.
Okay.
So there's one way you can do it. Another way to do it would be to use it as an IMAP. If you didn't have the paid version, you'd have to use it as an IMAP client, but back up the store, say cache everything locally, and then back up the IMAP store. So when you do your mail, you can do it offline. You're saving it. It's being saved there. You know, if you cut the internet, you'd still see your mail in your mail client. That means you have a copy of it. So it's just a question of backing up that copy.
Okay.
Now, one thing I like to do, and here this might be for an advanced use. This is your Black Diamond tip. There's a free, put in skiing terms. I'm figuring if you're in Bern, it's because you like to ski, right?
I can fake it pretty well.
So there's a free email program I love called Thunderbird. It's from the Mozilla folks. And they do Firefox. So Thunderbird stores, unlike Apple Mail, Outlook, any other mail client, it stores its mail in a very standard format, the mailbox format, MBX format, which is a text file. So you could just, if you felt like it, download, instead of modifying your Apple Mail, download Thunderbird. You'll have to go to Yahoo and get the settings for their POP settings because they're different. But put those POP settings into Thunderbird and then just say, download everything. I want every bit of mail from Yahoo. Now
it will give me all the folders.
It will give you all the folders. It will give you all the emails. And best of all, so they'll be organized on your Mac hard drive as folders. Inside, they'll be .mbx files, and you can read those with a text editor. So worst case, Yahoo goes away, your email goes away, you can't even use your mail client, you still can read your mail with just a text editor.
Yep.
And that's nice. So it also means Spotlight can index it, so you can search it with your Macintosh. A lot of advantages to doing that.
All righty.
Okay.
Great.
Nice to talk to you. Thanks for listening in Bern. Wow. Lots of people follow the show. Easy to do on the internet. We do stream it live. We stream audio and video live. But even better, you can go to our website, techguylabs.com, and we put up YouTube versions of the show afterwards. And we put up audio streams of the show afterwards. So you can get any show ever. I think going back to 2004. Must be kind of fun to hear that. This internet thing, it's a terrible idea. It's never going to fly. Whoever needed a mouse? No, it's not quite that old, but I have a picture. I was just looking at a picture Scott Wilkinson sent me of me and Scott when we first started doing this show in 2004. He's our home theater guy. 2004, and I'll tell you how old-fashioned that was. Instead of, I have a laptop in front of me. It's a pretty clunky old Macintosh titanium laptop. On top of it is my Franklin planner, my paper planner, and my smartphone, which is not a smartphone. It's an old-fashioned cell phone. I think it was a Nokia phone. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. It's 12 years ago. But in technology terms, it's ancient history. 2008. Or 2007, I guess it was. Apple came out with a smartphone. And I think that has really been a transformation in technology. I covered cell phones in the, 2000s, but they weren't really that interesting. They were just dumb phones. Then with Apple, they started becoming really full-fledged computers. And, fast forward 9 years, our smartphones really are, in many ways, the computer we use the most day in, day out. They've become very interesting devices, and they've enabled a whole huge number of new businesses like the app business. Cheryl in Alexandria, Virginia. Hi, Cheryl. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. I wanted to ask you about some plain old email.
Plain old email.
And especially, clicking on links in email. Am I truly protecting myself by being a user in Windows as opposed to an admin or Boy. Using an iPad or my phone?
Cheryl, I'm so glad you're asking this question because that is the number one way people get infected. It's possible in email to obscure what that link really goes to. So HTML email, which most people are using, it's like a web page. You can write text that says Bank of America, but the link goes to hacker.com. And you wouldn't know unless you were careful about, hovering over it, right-clicking on it. You really have to be careful. So your iPad is definitely protecting you. You can safely click links in the iPad. If you're doing it on a PC or a Mac, if you get email that from your bank or something where you really feel like, I got to respond to this, it's better not to click the link, but just to go to your browser and type in your bank's address. Do it by hand. Then you know you're at your bank, right?
Okay.
Because the trick is, perfect question, these links are very often used to trick people into downloading software, running software, or going to a phishing site, a site that looks just like your bank, for instance, and you get an email saying, somebody's been in your account. We need you to log in immediately and verify some transactions. You go, oh, no, you click the link in the email. It puts you on a page, looks just like your bank. You enter your login and password, and bingo, the bad guys have it. And you, without even anything, right? You could do that on an iPad, too, so be careful about that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt coming up. Hold on just a second, Cheryl. So, yeah, you ask such a good question. I had to run out of time, but I can still talk to you, thank goodness. Is there anything else you'd like to know?
Well, do you foresee a day when the geniuses in Silicon Valley will be able to code around this? Because it is such a natural thing to
do,
a natural way to do business, and many legitimate businesses still do it that way. So,
well, there are a few things. All browsers now, and I recommend Google Chrome especially, will warn you if you go to a site that they think is suspicious.
Okay.
So that's a big improvement. And browsers will now tell you, this site, they might even block you from going there. This is a known phishing site. The problem is they don't catch everything. But it's a good start. Gmail, a good email client like Gmail will also filter out those emails. But again, they can't catch everything because when somebody creates a new phishing scam, it works at first. It's only after a while that it doesn't work.
Okay.
So you really, unfortunately, at this point, there's, people often say, well, I run an antivirus. And, at this point, there's no substitute for you being careful. Now, I love that you're not running as an administrator. That protects you a little bit, but it wouldn't protect you about that scenario I just described, would it?
No.
No, because, you're kind of willingly giving them your login. One thing that will help in a case like that, and I always turn this on, is if your bank has something called two-factor authentication, that's where it says, okay, thanks for the login and password. Now we're going to send you a text message with a number enter that number. That
yes.
will stop them, right? Because they don't have your phone.
Yes. Perfect.
So okay, turn those
on some site.
Turn those on wherever second factor. They call it second factor. That means a password plus. Thank you, baby. Whenever second factor is available, turn that on.
Okay.
That will help a lot.
Thank you much.
Oh, I'm so glad you called. Thank you. That's a really important conversation. We should have that regularly. Thanks. Thanks, okay. Cheryl. Take care. Bye bye.
Oh, my lunch is here. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, there's a good-looking lunch, isn't that? That's a good-looking. Dr. Mom approved. That is a good-looking lunch. See, yeah, they got my dressing is on the top this time because I forgot to put it in the bottom. So I put it on after. But you know what? That keeps it a little fresher. The spinach. This is my favorite little kind of slaw mix of broccoli, cabbage, and carrots, kind of all slawed up. Then we got about like a quarter cup of lovely quinoa, a little bit of starch in there. And under that is some garbanzo beans. Then we got peppers, artichoke hearts. Then we got your tomatoes with celery, carrots, a little scallions on the bottom. That is good eating. That is mighty good eating. Mm-mm-mm. I love quinoa.
Down on
is there?
Yeah.
I love quinoa. I make better quinoa than most people. I am because quinoa has no flavor, so I always make it with chicken broth or something to give it some flavor. And by the way, this dressing of my own invention, it looks like peanut butter. That's because I don't use oil; I use cashews, raw cashews instead of olive oil, and then a ton of shallots, diced shallots. Put that in the Vitamix. And then nice balsamic, and then a good, nice moutarde, a little moutarde de Meaux Dijon mustard in there. My mouth is watering. And it's very tangy, but it's very, very tasty. You can eat as much vegetables as you want. That's the beauty of vegetables. You can have a ton of vegetables. I love hearing that Kodachrome song, because that means he's here. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, to talk about digital photography. My favorite hobby. I have to say, I love it. Hello, Chris Marquardt.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I am great. Good to see you again.
That's good.
The reason I like digital photography, for me, is because I work in sound all day, right? And so I think it's good to have a hobby that uses other abilities to develop those. Otherwise, I wouldn't ever use my vision, my sound, my look at things. So this forces me to look at things, and I love doing this.
There must be a connection, because I used to be like a professional sound guy too. So
yeah,
maybe the
see?
Sound
yeah.
and the visual part. Maybe it's really this counterbalance that we all need. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good hobby anyway for me. And I carry my camera now everywhere I go. My little point. It's kind of a Well, I don't know. Can you call a Leica Q a point-and-shoot camera? kind of a point-and-shoot.
It is kind of.
I can't change the lenses.
Well, yeah, but you can change other things if you want to.
Yeah.
Not that you really have to, but.
Oh, I love this camera. I've loved cameras before, but this is. There's something about this camera. It's just. It's. You want to just hold it close to your heart, probably because it costs $4,000.
That helps, yeah.
I don't even want to take it out of the house anymore. No, this really is, and it gets great images, and it's just fun to shoot with. Anyway, what do you want to talk about?
Well, I have a trick.
Yes.
I have a trick to share.
I need tricks.
It is around exposure. Now, you know me talking about to get it, try getting it right in camera, right, get the exposure right when things are too dark in front of the camera, when everything is too bright in front of the camera. And we've done this in the past, so that's not really what I want to talk about. This tip is for those who edit their photos, those who go take their camera home, import the pictures into the computer, and then take them into any software, Lightroom or Aperture or what else is there, Affinity Photo, Apple Photos, and lots of stuff out there. Because the dirty little trick is, the dirty little secret is, even the professionals have to adjust and tweak a few things back home.
No.
When they return their, yes, of course we do. Of course we do. Now, here's the thing. There's actually a formula, like a silver bullet. And I know how much, especially tech-minded people, like to have this simple, easy solution. There is a simple, easy solution to get one thing in your exposure really right, and that's the whites. This is very important. Like the bright parts of your image, they can be underexposed when they come out of the camera. Like if you're shooting in snow, for example, you will often get like gray snow. If you overexpose them, maybe some clouds in the sky are overexposed. That is something where you tend sometimes, where the camera tends to get it wrong. And here's the trick that you can do. It works really well if you shot in RAW. It works kind of okay in JPEG, but if you shoot in RAW, here's what you do. Now, you want to take this photo editing software, your Lightroom or your Aperture or something, and switch it off full screen. So you want to only cover part of the screen with this window. And then next to it, you put an empty window, like a text editor or a Word document that has nothing in it, just something that is plain white. And this will tell you where your computer kind of has its maximum brightness, where this is the upper limit pretty much in terms of brightness. And when you have those next to each other, the photo and the white empty document, now in the photo, adjust the exposure. Take the exposure slider and slide it up and down to the point where the white, a white thing in the photo, you need something white in the photo, like a paper, piece of paper, a shirt or a white car or something. Slide that exposure slider to the point where that is just a little darker than what you have in this bright document. So you want to adjust the whites in your image to slightly below what is the maximum possible thing. And that's where the photo will look just right, where snow will look right, where paper will look right, where a white shirt will look right. Just this slightly below this maximum. That's where you want the whites to be. And this white document next to the photo editor, that's where you, that's pretty much your reference that you're working against.
I carry with me in my wallet, this is kind of crazy, a card. I got it. It was sent to me by Lightbox Photography Cards that has white, mm-hmm. black, and 50% gray on the back. It's like mm-hmm. a credit card. And if I'm doing a shoot in a particularly weird light situation or whatever, the first picture I'll take, I'll put that card. It's not very big. I'll just put that card in the shot. And then all the rest of the shots in that particular lighting situation, I kind of know what white is, what the black is.
And that's the reference you're looking for. And if you have that reference, if you have that reference and you adjust that to be just slightly lower, I mean, that's the point. It can't be exactly the same brightness as the white thing next to it, because that is already too bright. You want it lower. And then when you look at the picture and you say, oh, you know, the shadows are a bit too dark now, then you still can adjust the shadows upwards. There's a shadow slider in your software. But the whites, you get those spot on with this little trick.
It's a great trick. And yeah, I guess a piece of paper is white enough. You know, though, when we used to do a lot of TV, and they wanted, before they begin the show, they will white balance. They'll do the same thing with the cameras. And I, when I'm wearing a white shirt, I'd say, use the white shirt. They say, oh, no, you can't use clothing because they put bluing in it at the cleaners, and it's actually blue. It looks white. That's how they make it look so white.
Yeah,
it's blue. So they don't use that for white. Don't use your shirt for white balancing. Piece of paper will work, though.
But you can use it for the exposure, for the brightness.
For brightness, I guess you could.
Absolutely perfect. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
So your shirt, looking at your shirt, you have all the detail. You have the little wrinkles in there.
So that'd be a good place to start, right? Yeah, so it's not blown out.
That's a good place to start. And then if you bring that down to the point where it's not quite white and you have a bit of detail and a bit of the structure in it, that's where you want this to be.
If your camera has, and more cameras are doing this, a histogram on it, that's another useful thing you can do. It'll show you where there – actually, mine has a clipping thing, right? So you can set it so that when you're losing information in an area because it's too bright, it starts to zebra at you, blink at you. And when I see that, I just darken it just a little bit down because I want it to be right to that point, but no brighter, right?
Yep. That's pretty much
tip.
If you work with a histogram, 3/4 is about where you want the whites to be. That's a good point for a white shirt.
Or turn on the zebra if you have a zebra in your camera.
Or a zebra,
Hey, I want to pass along something my wife discovered. Lisa's an avid photographer, but even more than that, she loves retouching. She loves getting into Photoshop and Lightroom and working with pictures. And she found an app on iOS called HippoPix. This is created by a woman named Elizabeth Pritz. And it's a collaborative photo gallery. So you put your pictures on it, and then others can photo edit it and offer suggestions for how it might be improved using Lightroom or any one of many tools. Lisa will loves to just sit there, take other people's pictures, and she improves them immeasurably. And it's really a lot of fun. So if you have an iOS device, it's called Hippo, H-I-P-P-O, Pix. And we want to get more people in there. I know. I never heard of it either.
I'll check it out.
It's neat. And if you're skilled at this, the problem is there are a lot more people putting pictures in there hoping they'll be retouched than there are retouchers fixing up pictures. So we need both. More retouchers. Get in there if you like to play with us. And a great way to learn, right? Hey, what's our assignment? Absolutely. What's our assignment, Chris Marquardt?
Dirt. I'm still doing dirt.
Dirt made my picture. Go to Flickr, upload a picture. Every week you can upload a new picture illustrating the word, concept, or of dirt, and we'll pick some in a couple of weeks. Chris Marquardt is at discoverthetopfloor.com, his fabulous, fabulous place to take photo workshops and learn more about photography. Thank you, Chris.
Sure.
Yeah, that I think is one of the most useful things you just described that I've ever learned, which is especially on a good camera. There's often detail in the blacks, so you want to go up to the top, right?
With the current sensor, it's fairly easy to get to tickle some detail out of the shadows. But really, the whites are
when you get those right,
when you don't clip them. And by the way, don't get right up to the edge. Go quite a bit further down. Three quarters of the histogram is really the right spot for shirts. Paper. Snow can be a bit higher, but the normal white stuff that you see around you, like an Apple keyboard and that kind of stuff, that is really at home at three quarters of the histogram.
That's such a useful tip. I'm going to try that at NAB.
Do that.
Bringing my point and shoot with me.
Oh, by the way, quick word to the chat room. Next Sunday, I want to do a chat room Q&A.
Oh, good.
And I will post the instructions into the chat room. So whoever's listening, I want your questions.
I want your questions. Mm-hmm. All right, Chris. It's great to talk to you.
All right, talk to you again.
Have a great day. Take care. Yeah, I've been moving around. I finally went all Debian because I decided, so I was using a rolling release. I think I mentioned this the other day. I was using Arch in a rolling release, but I downloaded something and suddenly I couldn't log in anymore. I couldn't see text. It was some driver issue on either of my Dells. It was like, maybe I shouldn't be doing rolling release because I don't want to take the time every time an update breaks things to fix it. So I went to stable Debian and and I like GNOME. With the GNOME desktop and Debian, it is as good as Windows or Mac. It's a really solid operating system. It looks good. It's usable. There's great choices of software. I'm very, very happy. And I do think that, especially with Windows folks, this is probably a good direction to think about. Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful day for a daydream. Spring. All over the Northern Hemisphere. It's 82 degrees here in Petaluma. It's beautiful, warm day. I hope you're enjoying wherever you are, enjoying the day. And thank you for sharing. Oh, actually, it's not 82 degrees here. It's 82 degrees in Vaiaku, Tuvalu. I guess my computer thinks it's in the Pacific Islands. That's the dot. Oh, maybe because of .tv. That's the .tv domain is in Tuvalu. I'll have to to update that. I think it is in the 80s here, though. I don't know. I'm inside. It's supposed to be, isn't it? Yeah. Let's see what my phone says. See if my phone knows. Isn't that sad nowadays? We only know the weather from what our devices tell us.
It's 70.
It's chilly. It's a chilly 70 degrees. Back to the phones we go, and Pat in San Pedro, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Pat.
Hey, Leo, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
It's an easy one.
Oh, I hope so, too. I'm so exhausted from all these hard calls.
Well, I'm glad you got your phone lines back up.
Yes, I am too.
Yes, yeah, so my question is with regards to my GS5.
Okay.
My carrier is Verizon. Don't know if that matters, but I keep getting a notification that there is an update that it wants me to install.
Yes.
And it says it also includes some security updates.
Yes.
I have yet to install it because I don't know what's in it.
Do it.
Do I break my phone? Do I have to do it?
Well, you don't have to do it, but this is something that Windows users are used to, the monthly update, right? Every patch Tuesdays, every second Tuesday of the month, and almost always there's security updates. Android has initiated a similar monthly security update, and most carriers are now supporting it. You don't get it at the first of the month because Verizon and everybody else wants to make sure it's not going to break anything, but it often fixes security issues that should be fixed. It should improve performance and other things. I, for one, am very glad to see these monthly updates. And just think of it the same way as you get your Windows updates every month, you're going to start getting Android updates every month. And that's what Verizon's pushing you to your Galaxy S5.
Okay, so I don't need to be fearful.
You do not need to be fearful. You're right to... I'm glad you're suspicious. You're right to be suspicious because anytime you install something, there's always the risk that it's from a bad actor and it's going to do something bad to you. But it's coming from Verizon. It's coming through the auto update function of your phone. It wouldn't be a bad idea to wait a few days. You don't need to be the first on your block to install it. So that way, if somebody compromised Verizon's servers and was able to get onto their servers and push malware out through their approved update process, within a few days you'd hear about it. You would really hear about it. So that gives it a few days to kind of percolate down and make sure it is okay. It gives them a few days to turn it off, too. So if you're still getting that warning after a few days, I would do it. There are security issues. You know, no software is perfect. It has to be, somebody has to keep an eye on it and patch it. And that's why I'm actually very glad to see that Google, Android, and the carriers have started, and the manufacturers, too, for that matter. Samsung's also a participant in this, are updating regularly. You should do it.
Okay, I will do that. And may I ask you another, hopefully, very quick question?
Yes, but by the way, Pat, I'm glad you asked. That's really good. Yeah. Okay. You should be. No, your suspicion is really valuable. It will protect you.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
Stay suspicious.
Will do. Very quickly, could you recommend or at least point me to a place where I can do a little research? I'm trying to find a tablet, non-Apple, but is about the same size as the iPad Mini, which could run the Microsoft Office software.
Okay, so Android does have Microsoft Office. It's interesting. Microsoft has made... Office, it's mobile Office, touch first Office, they call it, available on iOS and Android. As long as you're content with the mobile version, not the full Office, Android tablet would work.
Any particular one that would keep me in about the same size as the Mini?
Yeah, the Mini is what, 8 inches. So I'm trying to think of who makes a nice, I would say Samsung. They really make decent Android tablets. I'm not sure they make one that size. Let me check. But they would be my first choice. Google used to make an excellent 7-inch, the Nexus 7 I still use, but they stopped keeping it up to date. They haven't done an update in a while.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I'm sorry to say, because that would be my first choice. But I would take a look at the Galaxy Tab. They do make a smaller screen size. The Galaxy Tab S2 is 8 inches. It's exactly the same size as an iPad. It's a little less expensive.
No, iPad Mini.
Mini, yes. Same size as an iPad Mini.
Okay.
So they make a couple of 8 inches. I would say the Galaxy Tab S2 would be my first choice.
Okay. I'll
All right.
Take a look at it then.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for the call. Somebody else is mentioning the NVIDIA Shield. That also is a good tablet, although that's focused. That's a fancy processor in there focused more on gaming. So if you were going to game, I would do it. If you wanted the full Microsoft Office, of course, there are manufacturers of Windows tablets in that size. I'm not sure I would want to use Windows in an 8-inch screen. That makes me a little nervous. I think the best choice for what you just described is the touch-first versions of Office designed for tablets on a Samsung Galaxy Tab S2 It's about $400 for the 8-inch 32 gigabyte with Wi-Fi, and you can get more memory, of course. You can get different size screens. But the nice thing about the Galaxy Tab is you can add an SD card. So if you needed more storage, I'd get the 32 gig, and if you needed more storage, you could put a cheap SD card in there and add quite a bit. Let's go to Mike in Lubbock, Texas. You're next. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks so much for calling. What can I do for you?
Well, I got a problem and I need your help because I'm looking for a cell phone that has, I'm visually impaired, and I have been told about, I don't know what you call it, an app or something on your phone. It's called accessibility.
Yeah. So there's two ways to go with this. If you want a smartphone, you know, like an iPhone that does more computing things, then you're going to use one that has some accessibility features. That means it's easier to access. Sounds like you have some vision. You have low vision?
No, none at all.
None at all. Okay. So no. The other way to go, there are phones with big buttons, big numbers that are good for people with low vision, like the Jitterbug, but that's not going to help you at all, is it? You want a smartphone, it sounds like.
The only thing I want to be able to do is get on the internet, look up stuff on...
Yeah. By the way, good smartphones from Android and Apple all have accessibility features. They have things called VoiceOver. Do you ever use a screen reader on your computer?
No, I haven't even been able to.
So this is new to you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's a good idea to look for, there'll be a nonprofit in your area like the Independent Living Resource Center or Lighthouse for the Blind. They will help train you because you're going to need a screen reader. Now, these are great because they will read the screen. You don't have to use your eyes at all. You'll hear it. VoiceOver on the Apple iPhone does this. Android also has a screen reader. But I think it's going to be helpful to have some training to work with it. So I would look for some help in a nonprofit in your region. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, you know, all that jazz. Anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. I'm glad to help you spend your money. Well, I'm glad to help you save money, too. You know, a lot of times we always kind of focus on the new. And one thing that's really happened is, boy, and Apple's realizing it, kind of to their chagrin, is a lot of this stuff you don't really need to upgrade. You got an iPad? You don't need another one. It lasts. You got a computer that you bought in the last few years? There's no compelling reason to upgrade it. It's not worn out. It's fast enough. You know, in the earliest days, of course, what was happening was the computers weren't very powerful, and people were developing software, and particularly operating systems, that required more and more power. Graphical operating systems with windows and menus really required a lot more power. And so there was this kind of seesaw. They'd put more memory, more power in a computer, and then the people making the software would increase the need that, you know, they say, oh, good, we can beef this software up. But that cycle's over. So software is not getting more demanding anymore. And certainly not outpacing the kind of amazing performance we're getting out of modern computers. Multi-gigahertz processors. You know, we sometimes think, oh, 4 gigs of RAM. How can I ever live with four? That's 4 gigs of RAM. It's a huge amount. 8, 16, even more amazing. And most computers you buy today have 4 to 8 gigs of RAM. Even more, most smartphones now have at least 2. That's a ton. And memory is faster. Hard drives, and even better, SSD, solid-state drives, are faster still. Your software is well served by even a few year old computer, and it's not going to wear out. And that's the point: is you're not gonna the transmission's not going to go on you. There's no moving parts. Chances are the first thing that'll go is the hard drive, and that's easily and inexpensively replaced. So I'll be glad to save you money too. 8888 ask Leo. Let's go to Bernie in Washington. Hi,
hello,
Bernie.
Leo.
Nice to talk to you.
And thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What can I do for you?
Well, I have a Linux and Windows question for you.
Okay.
Long time ago, I had I still have the software Red Hat 9.0.
Yeah.
And I install it, combine it with Windows XP.
Yeah. You had what we call a dual boot system.
Right. But I'm not too geek, and I give up on Red Hat. And so I decided to use, nowadays, not like you were saying, now the hard drives are so big. So I want to use that spare hard drive that I have. It's 80 gigs. And when I try to format it in Windows, I only recognize the partition from Windows, which is 60 gigs.
Okay.
And those 20 gigs are in the air. Are there.
You don't need to save anything on the hard drive, right?
No, I formatted it. I want to use it.
So formatting is not what you need to do at this point. You need to repartition it.
Correct.
So you're going to use FDisk or, if you are you using a Windows installer to do this?
Well, I try to use, but right now it's only recognized, like I say, 60 gigs. And I want to recover those 20 gigs, but I don't know how to do it.
What are you using to install? A Windows installer?
Windows installer.
Okay. So Windows installer has a partitioner built into it. You don't see it unless you need it, and so you might have to go into the options. I'm trying to remember. It's been a long time. But I think you go into options, and then you'll see then that you could see how the drives are laid out. The reason it doesn't see that other 20 is it's formatted with a Linux format. Right. So it's not an NTFS or FAT32 format. So it doesn't know. It thinks it's just nothing there. So what you need to do is delete that partition and create one big partition, one 80-gigabyte partition, and then format that with NTFS. And you could do that all in the formatter, the partitioner that comes with the Windows installer. It really is, I think, FDisk.
Yeah.
So that's what you do. You delete the Linux partition. That FDisk will see that. So you delete it and make one large primary partition. And then format that. And then from then on, the installer will say, yes, you have an 80 gig drive.
You made it so easy. Wow.
I've done it a few times.
You may God.
Hey, thanks for calling. Actually, it's interesting. Red Hat was the Linux to choose for a long time. It's become the enterprise choice. It is. They've really focused on business. And no longer is probably a consumer choice. But it's a very nice Linux. And I think, I was talking about this off the air. I feel like Linux is a great operating system. It really is. And it has matured to the point now. Well, first of all, lots of people are using it because it's the operating system Android runs on. It is a Linux computer. So you're already using Linux. If you surf the web, most of the sites you visit, or a great many anyway, at least half, are running Linux as well, or some form of Unix, most often Red Hat, or there are a bunch of other ones, CentOS. But those are Linux. So Linux was a free operating system. It was created by a Finnish graduate student in 1992, Linus Torvalds. He wrote the kernel, the heart of the operating system. And then on top of it are thousands of available programs, mostly from the Free Software Foundation. They're often called GNU, G-N-U programs. The Free Software Foundation, starting in the 90s, wanted to create free open versions, free as in liberty, not free as in free money, although they don't cost anything, but really free as in liberated versions of the highly encumbered Unix programs. Unix, which was created originally by Bell Labs, and then there were spinoffs from University of California at Berkeley. And of course, Unix was the, robust operating system for many years. But there were a lot of patents associated with it. So the Free Software Foundation said, you know what we should do is rewrite all this stuff so it has the same functionality, but it's not copyrighted. They call it copylefted. It's copylefted, which means you can get the source code for it, you can modify it, you can examine it, you can redistribute it as you will. It's liberated. And so the Free Software Foundation created GNU, which stands for GNU's not Unix, GNU, GNU's not Unix, And they've recreated almost all of the Unix programs. And they run with the Linux kernel to create something people generally call Linux, although probably more properly called GNU Linux, because most of it is GNU. And it is distributed in a variety of ways and fashions by a variety of groups, some for-profit companies like Red Hat, many just hobbyists. And there are many, many choices when you go out there, and there's no just one Linux. Probably the best known now is Ubuntu, which was created with the help of a dot-com millionaire named Mark Shuttleworth. He put a lot of money into it, distributed it freely. You could even get free CDs from Ubuntu, and really made it a desktop operating system a lot of people use. But there are other choices. Ubuntu is based on an even older form called Debian, which I like. That's probably my preferred version. But there are many other versions, kind of Linux geeks, like something called Arch Linux. All of these have the same basic attributes, the Linux kernel, the GNU software on top of it. But they each come with their own installers and bundlers and packagers. And that's what makes them unique, kind of the experience of installation. So I would not hesitate, Bernie, to continue to use Linux if you feel like using it. Put a little bit of space aside on your hard drive. You can have Windows 10 running and a little Linux. When you start up the machine, you can choose. There's some very good choices for beginners. Mint Linux is very popular. It's based on Ubuntu. Ubuntu is still great. And I happen to like Debian. Three great versions of Linux that pretty much anybody, I think, could install these days. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to take a break. Come back with more of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. The website, I don't mention this enough, and I know it would save you a lot of trouble because you don't have to write anything down. Just go to the website, techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. I've been using Linux, as we were talking about the free operating system Linux, for as long as it's been around. I'm pretty sure, the first person ever to install it on live television back in the days of the old Screensavers TV show on Tech TV. We installed it many times, and it got easier and easier, and it's gotten really easy to install these days, at least relatively. Probably not as easy as Macintosh or Windows, but it's close. And I always had a Linux box or two. In fact, the Dell computer that I've been using lately came with Ubuntu on it when I bought it a couple of years ago. Dell sells computers with Linux on it. You even save, $30 because you don't have to buy Windows. But I thought I would keep up with it, and particularly after all the hoorah about Windows 10. I have to say, I'm a little disappointed with the way Microsoft has forced Windows 10 on people. I like Windows 10. I do have a Microsoft Surface Book, and I use it. But I feel like that's just the wrong thing to do to customers. And furthermore, there's been a lot of concern lately about how Microsoft is using the information it gathers with Windows 10. It gathers a lot of information about you. Of course, anybody who has an internet-connected device is at risk. In the old days, an operating system just would never dream of doing such a thing. But Microsoft's learned a lesson from smartphones and web surfing, where data is gathered routinely on you, and a lot of it. And that bothered me a little bit, too. So I thought, well, maybe it's time to start looking again at Linux. And with the purpose of being able to report back to you and say whether it's really ready for people to try. And I think it is. I think you can have a very good computing experience, a rock-solid system. Probably for most people, the best way to use it would be to buy a Chromebook. This is a very stripped-down version of Linux, and it really is just the Google Chrome browser with a few extra features. But for most people, that's all they really need is a browser, something that they could surf the web with, answer email with. They don't, they could do you could do maybe a little photo editing, things like that, but for most people, that's what you do with your computer, right? So Chrome OS is actually a very good choice for people who don't need a full general-purpose computer. And it might be a kind of an early way to get into Linux itself. I've been very impressed with the quality of the software, the stability and security of the operating system. For people who are looking to retreat most PCs can run Linux. You don't have to run Windows on your PC, and maybe it's time, especially if you have an older system, to take a look. Dave in Aliso Viejo, California. Hi, Dave. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Pleasure to speak to you, Leo. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thanks so much for calling.
I have a Nexus 6, the Motorola one, and I use Go SMS, and I use K9 email.
Yeah.
And when people text me pictures, you know, you push on the pictures and it downloads to the SD card.
Right.
I don't have an SD card. Phone can't take one. And it's MIA. I look all over the place for these pictures.
So it says we're downloading to the SD card?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So you need a file manager. There are a couple of good ones. I use Astro, A-S-T-R-O.
Okay.
And you'll see what – there is an SD card, in effect, on your Nexus 6. I don't know why Google does this, but they have – part of the internal memory is treated like is emulating an SD card.
That's what it says, emulated.
Emulated. And it's in there. But you need a file manager that you can kind of cruise around the operating system. And you're going to go back to the root, and it's going to say, I think, SD or zero.
That's right.
So go in there, and you'll find that there is – so there are parallel folders. There's a downloads folder in the main memory and the storage, and there's a downloads folder in the emulated storage. But it's all the same. I don't know why they do that, but they do.
Yeah, because if you go into the download, you don't see it.
No.
Or if you go into...
Because you're looking at downloads on the main device. So get a good file manager. Astro is free. I paid for the pro version. There are other ones. There's ES File Manager and so forth. Lately, I stopped using ES because it started to put a lot of kind of promotions for its other software on there. But
right.
What you'll do is you can now you can browse around as you would on a regular computer. And you'll see there is it's something like /data/media/0. And you'll see it there. And you'll go, oh, there's a whole different – there's two download folders, and that's where it's downloading it to.
Now, can you drag that download folder to the screen? Or
the file manager will allow you to move stuff around. But it sounds like it's K9 doing this, right?
Yes.
It sounds like K9 is defaulting for some reason to that location instead of the other. I would look in the K9 settings. You might be able to change it.
Right. Yeah, I did. I can't find it. I like K9 because you get this – I get so much junk email, which I don't mind.
Oh, it's a great program.
I like to be, I love to just, hit one button and just delete everything when I'm tired of looking at it,
Yeah. Look on my Galaxy S7, see if I think they do the same thing. It's just, it must be an Android thing. I don't know why they have these kind of parallel operating systems, but they do. So there's kind of real SD card, and then there's if you have an SD card, which you don't, of course, on a Nexus device, and then there is this, simulated SD card.
Right.
I guess it's under /MNT/SD card, and that's where you'll find it.
I'll find it.
Yeah, it's there.
The best part of my weekend. Thanks for
listening. I appreciate it. Yeah, that's really. I don't know if I want to know the internals of how and why they've done this. By the way, that's Linux, right there. You're using it. You're soaking in it. Perry in San Bernardino, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Perry.
Hi. I've been using Yahoo email for like the last 16, 17 years.
Wow.
And I'm suffering. I'm in the end stages of multiple sclerosis.
I am sorry. I'm sorry to hear that.
It's real bad. And the thing is, my life is on Yahoo email. I save everything and all that kind of stuff. And all my passwords and everything else is on Yahoo email.
Right.
When I contact Yahoo email and to say, hey, I lost my password, and they say they want the cell phone number that I used. Well, that cell phone number, the batteries went dead a long, long time ago. And it's like, and I've seen this story. Somebody wrote the same thing. The cell phone they use to get the information, to get the password, it doesn't work anymore. And so people, it's happened, at least happened to me and a couple other people that I read about. And I've been looking at this stuff for months. I've been looking at it. But the Yahoo goes, they just want to, the identification is, to send your information over to your cell phone. Well, that's fine, but the cell phone doesn't work. AT&T told me, well, you had like 30 days to renew.
It's gone. It's gone. That number is probably not even available. In fact, what it's doing is sending a text message to somebody else at this point. You know, I don't know. There's got to be some way to escalate this to Yahoo. When we come back, let me talk about what to do in general when you're having trouble like this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So this, you know, I hate to turn this back to backup, but this is ultimately a backup issue. So, if you've got something valuable anywhere, anywhere, whether it's on your local hard drive or it's on Yahoo Mail, it's at risk unless you make a second copy of it. That's all a backup is another copy. And the best kind of backup is three copies, two different kinds of media. And that saves you a little bit from saying, well, I have a copy of Yahoo Mail on Yahoo Mail or something like that. You want three copies, not two, not one. One is not a backup. One is at risk. Two is still a little at risk. Three is pretty safe. Two different forms of media and one in the cloud. In this case, it is in the cloud. So now your backup should be local. And you should have, you know, if it's mail, for instance, Yahoo has its own exporter, or you could do what I suggested to our caller a few hours ago, is you could download all the mail in your mail client. Do both. You run the Yahoo exporter, download the mail in your local mail client. Now you have two copies. Take that exported copy, burn it to a CD, and put it in a safe deposit box. If it's important, if you don't want to lose it, you have to back it up. You have to back it up. I think you're going to be able to get this back, but the problem is that we're going to rely on the kindness of Yahoo at this point, and you're in a situation you don't want to be in. I want you to save this, but I think what you're going to have to end up doing is writing to Marissa Meyer, the CEO of Yahoo. You're just going to throw yourself on the mercy of the court and say, please, can you please get me my data back? And they may say no. If you can still get into your Yahoo Mail, well, you can't, right? Because your password's changed or you forgot it. Wow. This is a very tough one. I don't have any magic powers to get around Yahoo's bureaucracy. And it is a bureaucracy. And so when you throw yourself on their mercy, that's all. You know, you can only do what you can do. You know, what they'll let you do. Okay, so here's the key with quinoa, and I will blog this, Magpie. You have to rinse it for a minute and rub it, because there's a husk on it you have to get off. It tastes soapy. It doesn't taste good. So this is the only negative on quinoa is you have to get a strainer. I have a very fine mesh strainer. And then I run it under the water, and I rub it to get the kernel off. And it takes about a minute. All right, then you're done. Then you cook it just like you would rice or anything else, but I don't use water. I use chicken broth and, you know, a little salt. And it's the best tasting quinoa you'll ever have because it doesn't have any flavor. Yeah, it's basically like making rice. 8888 Ask Leo. We're talking to Perry in San Bernardino. Perry's life is in his Yahoo Mail, 19 years worth of Yahoo Mail, and he's lost the password. And worse, he's lost the cell phone that he used to do the password recovery. He doesn't have it anymore. And that number has probably been released. Now, if it hasn't been released, you know, you could go and get it back. You also, and this is a technique that works often with many companies, write to the CEO. Now, you're unfortunate because Yahoo is kind of going under right now. You picked a company that is not in the greatest state. They're going to announce a buyer in a week. We'll find out who bought it a week from Monday. Probably, I'm guessing Verizon, but there are some interesting choices, including the Daily Mail, a newspaper out of England. But Yahoo's basically a fire sale going on right now. So that may or may not impact the tech support you get from them. Marissa Meyer may or may not have a lot of other things on her mind. However, I always suggest writing if you really can't get a support person to help you. And you try escalating. You say, can I talk to your supervisor? And if they still stonewall you and they say, no, the only way we can do this. And by the way, that's to protect you. I know. It doesn't sound like it's protecting you. But that's to keep somebody else from stealing your mail. Oh, I lost the phone. Can you just unlock it? Just tell me the password. They're not going to do that because they're protecting you, right? Now, you know it's you and I know it's you, but they don't know it's you. And so they're not going to just unlock the account on your say-so. I really don't know of any other way to do it. And writing Marissa Meyer may or may not get you any satisfaction because, frankly, if I were her, I would say the same thing. Well, sir, we have these precautions in place to protect you from losing your email to some bad guy who pretends to be you on the phone. We have to have some secondary way of validating who you are. So I think you may be out of luck. And this brings up a very important point. What is valuable? What data is valuable to you? That data, very important to back it up. Now, just because it's on Yahoo doesn't mean you have a backup. And you're learning why right now. A backup means you have multiple copies of the data stored in different places. That's really the key. That's what a backup is. I've heard of people, I backed up everything in the backup drive, so I deleted the original. No, you don't have a backup anymore. A backup is multiple copies, not one. I don't care if it's labeled backup. It ain't a backup if there's just one, whether it's on Yahoo or a hard drive that says backup. Multiple copies, and this is also important, stored in different locations. So there is a tool. If you can get into your Yahoo account, Yahoo has a backup tool that will back up your data, or you can use an email client, download all your email, take a copy and store it at work, or store it on Carbonite, or store it in a safe deposit box. Put it in different places. Multiple copies of different places, very important. And if you don't do that, the day will come, I'm sorry to say, where you will lose that data. Something will go wrong. You know, a computer, this system is not very reliable. I hate to tell you. It might appear to be, but it's not. It is not a reliable system, so you have to make it reliable by backing up on a regular basis. And so at this point, you're really going to have to throw yourself on the mercy of Yahoo, Perry, and say, please help me. Here's my story. How else can I prove my existence to you? Can I come to Mountain View and show you my driver's license? What is it you need me to do? They're going to have to prove that you want them to, by the way, make you prove you are you. They don't have a great system. If cell phone is the only way they can do it, that's not a great system. A lot of people don't have cell phones. You don't have a cell phone. So that isn't the best way to do it, but that's how they've done it. You're at their mercy. And there's no magic that I can wield, I wish there would, to get that back. Get in touch with Marissa Meyer. Every big company now has an executive response team that works with the CEO to handle cases like this. But if I were them, I would say to you, well, okay, but you still have to prove who you are. Because don't you think a hacker can write to Marissa Meyer too? No, I'm Perry. Really? See? Don't I look like Perry? I'm Perry. Give me Perry's email. They're not going to just roll over. Maybe they would have in the past. I think companies have learned their lesson. And you don't want them to. Jackie in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Great. I used to live in Petaluma. That's so funny.
How could you ever leave paradise?
The chicken capital, the chicken.
Yeah. Come back, Jackie, next week, butter and eggs day.
It smells like methane there.
Well, it's not methane. It's manure, okay? And it's called farm life.
It's lovely there.
It's
I love
green
it.
Acres, baby. And yeah, a couple of times a year, it's a little pungent.
And the Ugly Dog Award and the Arm Wrestling Award.
Yeah. There. How could you ever leave? The best city in the world. You probably got a job. A mustache? Yeah, we have Whiskerino every year, the mustache competition.
Okay, my goodness. The mustaches and the arm wrestling all at the same time.
Oh, we are a very progressive city. What can I do for you?
Okay. So I have an iPad 3 and a new iPhone 6 Plus. And
well, you are living large. You have all the latest Apple gear.
So anyway, I want that iPad Pro with the big screen now.
You know, I bought the iPad Pro with a big screen, and it's just a little too big. So I ended up...
I watched Netflix.
Oh, it'd be nice for that, but it's like carrying around a TV set. I mean, it really is fairly large. I ended up buying the new one. I call it the iPad Pro Junior because it's the 9.7-inch, just like your old iPad. And it still has the pencil and a keyboard, and I really like it.
Hmm.
But, okay, but so that's just for me. It's you know, it's a personal choice, obviously.
I don't have a TV. That's why I use my iPad.
It's like having a TV. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe that's the problem, because when I was watching Netflix last night, it said your iCloud storage is too full. Please back up. So I usually go and back up at the Apple store because my Wi-Fi at home.
It's faster internet. Well. Yeah. Yeah.
So it says either buy more the iCloud.
Yeah, that's not speed. That's you filled it up. So know, for free, you get 5 gigabytes. You don't get very much.
Well, see, I never put anything new on is the problem. I eliminated a lot of videos, a lot of photos.
It still has copies of all of that. So here's what you do. You can go into settings and, and go into iCloud. You can manage your iCloud storage. You can delete that old stuff. You might want to.
Well, I'm in there now. What does it mean? What do you mean? The iPhone or the iPad or go to the...
Well, it's all the same iCloud if it's all the same account. So it doesn't matter... Which you go with. So you're going to go into settings, and you're going into iCloud, and you'll see if you tap the storage button, you'll see how much storage you have, 5 gigabytes if you haven't paid for more. Now, by the way, the other option is to pay $2 a month and get 200 gigabytes.
Well, they say 99 cents a month, but okay, here it is. The iCloud photo library is 2.4 gigabytes. The iPhone is two.
Yeah. So you just go into manage storage and delete the stuff you don't want anymore, or you buy more storage. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Terrell is on the line from White House, Tennessee. Hello, Terrell. Terrell. Am I pushing all the buttons right? It sounds very quiet in Terrell's world. Let me try David in Orange County and hope I can hear him. Hi, David.
Hey, Leo.
I can hear you. Hi, David. Welcome.
Thanks. I have a Samsung S6 and downloaded the latest updates a couple of weeks ago. And ever since then, the fingerprint sensor does not work correctly. I called Verizon, and they say that they don't have anyone complaining about it. What happens is it can work one time, or it could not. You'll have to redo your password every time you use it, or it may work for an hour, and then you have to redo your password.
Ugh.
So I've wiped out all my fingerprints. I've wiped out my password. I reset everything, turned it off and on, a lot of times.
How
and
frustrating.
Nothing seems to help.
Yeah, I mean, and the one last thing, and this is what Verizon will tell you to do, too, is to reset the phone, the whole phone, you know, as if it's brand new. It sounds like you got a bad update, to be honest.
Do you think it's indicative of all S6s, or would it just be my phone?
No, I haven't heard a word about it. So, anytime you're updating an operating system, there's always this risk. You remind me of the caller we had earlier who said, well, should I do it? Yeah, you want to do it. You're doing the right thing. These are the monthly Android updates. You're going to start getting these every month now.
Right.
And it really is important to do them, but there's always a risk anytime you update an operating system that something will go wrong. The good news is on Android, resetting the phone is usually all right. I don't know. You can turn on backup to Google if you've got that turned off. It's in the backup and reset settings. And Samsung also, if you have a Samsung account, will back up your storage, your settings. Stuff like that. You'll reinstall apps, but it's probably at this point indicated. It sounds like the update didn't take or did something bad, resetting the phone. Now, remember, when you have an updated phone, the reset does not roll you back to the original factory status. Unfortunately, the update stays. But let's hope that that fixes. We're going to put Scooter X has found something on the internet, how to clear cache on the Galaxy that might be helpful. One more kind of pre-reset thing to do. But they're really, you've done most of the things I would have suggested. And so techguylabs.com is the website. We'll put a link to that up on techguylabs.com.
If enough people complain about it, do you think they'll do an additional update?
Oh, yeah. They'll do, if it's a bad update. So there's two possibilities. It could be the update is bad, in which case they would get a lot of complaints, wouldn't they?
Right.
Or maybe the update went wrong and, you're just unlucky. And that's what they're telling you. But, of course, maybe they haven't heard all the complaints yet. If your Samsung Galaxy S6, this is from AndroidPit.com, which I've never heard of. It says, if your Samsung Galaxy S6 is playing up and you can't figure out why, try clearing the cache. There are two types of cache, app and system, and wiping either can have the desired effect. So I'm going to put a link in here because it's a few steps. But this won't clear your system cache, won't clear your data. Basically, you're going to turn it off, power it up with the volume up and the home button held down. And that's going to put you into a kind of a recovery mode. You'll see kind of a weird screen with weird text, and you'll see some choices, including wipe cache partition and wipe system partition or system cache. And you can take a look at trying that first. This is kind of a high-end fix. So again, power it off. I'll put the link in the show notes, but the gist of it is power it off all the way. Then hold the power button, volume up button, and the home button until you see the blue screen with the Android on it. And then you'll get to the recovery menu. And the volume buttons let you scroll up and down. When you get to wipe cache partition, you can highlight that and press the power to confirm it and see what happens.
All right. Thank you much.
That's at least better than having to wipe the whole thing. Eventually, you may have to do that, though. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. So is Terrell back? All right. Let's try it now this time. Terrell in White House, Tennessee. Hi, Terrell.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Thank you. Great.
Appreciate you taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I wanted to make a comment on was the fact, and I think you had an earlier caller who may have alluded to this. I just came in on the tail end of it. But I wanted to make a comment on the fact that, how open to how accessible that the Apple and the Mac computers and the iPhone is for people with disabilities. I think Apple has really done an outstanding job in that respect. I would like to see Google be a little bit more aggressive in this area, as well as Microsoft. I think Apple has still got some work to do, but Google and Microsoft, I would like to see them be a bit more aggressive in that. And that's my comment. And I'm, like I said, I'm a first time listener and first time caller.
Thank you, Terrell. I couldn't agree with you more. Apple's the gold standard in accessibility. And they've really done it right with the iPhone. Are you an iPhone user?
Yes, I use VoiceOver. And I have to say that I use VoiceOver and I own the Braille display. And it's a very respectable screen reader because you don't have to pay a yearly SMA agreement or anything like that.
I know. Isn't that awesome? So many accessibility tools like JAWS cost an arm and a leg, and
they really do. And it's sad because 80% of blind people are unemployed.
Right.
And JAWS is a great screener. I have a friend who's probably listening, Steve, who trained me on JAWS, and it's a great screen reader. Great for the job and on the web and things like that, but it's thousands of dollars.
It's crazy.
Absolutely. The professional version of that package is $1,095.
That's just nuts. And Apple charges nothing for their accessibility, right. Nor does Google or Microsoft. I agree with you. I mean, at least Google's making an effort, but Apple is the gold standard. Now, I'm at a disadvantage because I don't use these, and so I don't know which is good or not. So I love hearing from blind listeners who can tell me. And you're not alone, Terrell. Everyone I've talked to says, oh, no, Apple's the one to use if you can use it. Now, absolutely. How about training? Because our caller, I don't know if he was newly blind or he had just never used a screen reader before. You really need some help learning how to use it, I think, don't
absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. Let me give you, and maybe you can...
Do it quickly. I got 30, I got 30 seconds. So.
Absolutely. The National Braille Press, NBP.org, has put together Getting Started with the iPhone.
NBP.org. Terrell, yeah. I'm so glad you called. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Have a great day. Leo Laporte, thanks to Nathan Staten, our musical director. Thanks to Kim Schaffer, our phone ranger. Thanks to you for listening. We'll see you next time. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today and Tech News Tonight, and of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.